Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for February 22nd, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Alexander Hoffman, senior author of a paper published in this week's issue about specificity in the innate immune response. The innate immune response is a general response that's activated by the presence of viruses, bacteria, or other pathogens. The innate immune response doesn't provide long-lasting immunity. That's the job of the adaptive immune system, which generates antibodies that protect an individual from specific pathogens over the long term. In contrast, the innate immune response uses genetically encoded pathways to generate a rapid response to foreign invaders. There is some specificity in the innate immune response, however, in that different pathogens elicit activation of a different set of target genes. For example, the genes activated in response to a viral infection are different from the genes that are activated in response to bacterial infection. In their current Science Signaling paper, Hoffman's group describes how NF-kappa-B P50 activity contributes to the specificity of the innate immune response. Welcome, Dr. Hoffman.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the call.
The innate immune response is often described as a generic response to pathogens. How specific is the innate immune response?
You know, there's interest now our interest actually to figure out whether there might be specificity in the innate immune response, that it's not just general, that it's tailored to each pathogen, and whether we can make it last longer than just a few hours or a couple of days, and therefore make that a basis for developing innate immune vaccines.
What cell types are involved in the innate immune response, and what receptors on these cells are activated by pathogens?
The innate immune response is triggered by receptors that recognize pathogens, and those receptors are both on the plasma membrane, you know, looking around what's in the environment, as well as within the cell. And there's a large number of these receptors that recognize all kinds of different molecules that are associated with pathogens, and that could be nucleic acids, it could be proteins, it could be lipids or sugars. And those receptors then trigger the activation of kinases and other signaling enzymes that initiate the signaling cascades to activate gene expression programs.
Does activation of any of these receptors result in the same type of innate immune response, or does activation of different receptors produce different consequences?
That's a really great question, because that remains somewhat unresolved. There's certainly a large set of genes that seems to be activated no matter what pathogen the cell is seeing. But it looks like there's also a large number of genes that are induced in a more receptor-specific manner or in a pathogen-specific manner. And that makes sense, because some aspect of the immune response is actually deleterious to the cell. It comes at a cost to the cell. And so it would make sense to avoid turning on genes that carry a certain cost unless the cost is outweighed by the benefit to protect against a pathogen. All kinds of different pathogens, bacteria and viruses and intracellular pathogens, and each one is likely to be fought against through different means, because those are very different types of pathogens.
You mentioned that some aspects of the immune response can actually be deleterious to cells.
Yes.
What are some of the genes that are activated in the immune response?
So there's two classes of genes that are part of the innate immune response. One class that generally reduces the functionality of core machinery of the cell, whether that's transcription or translation, and that will then affect pathogens that rely on that machinery. And so cells thereby reduce their replication. But if cells induce these genes without good reason, then of course there's toxicity associated with having those genes on. And then there's other genes that are induced that are more specific to particular pathogens. For example, the RNA metabolizing enzymes against RNA viruses. And then there's a third class of genes I should mention that is not really part of the, that is not really constitutes an innate immune response, but it's the inflammatory cytokines that go hand in hand with innate immune response that will then activate the adaptive immunity, which comes later.
How is specificity generated? How does activation of a particular receptor get turned into activation of a specific subset of genes?
Yeah, that's also a very good question, and many people have been thinking about this for a while. And I think one dominant model for this is what's called a combinatorial control of gene expression. And the idea is that a particular receptor may activate a specific set of kinases and transcription factors, and the target genes require also a specific set of transcription factors for their activation. So not just one of them, but a particular combination. And therefore, for example, or let's say the TNF receptor, which activates NF-kappa-B, will activate NF-kappa-B target genes, but other target genes may require NF-kappa-B plus the interferon response factors, and they together function cooperatively. And so those genes are only induced in response to receptors that are able to activate both of these transcription factors, not receptors that only activate one or the other.
And in the current study, your group looked at the role of NF-kappa-B P50 homodimers in the innate immune response.
Yes. When we started this work, the predominant model was that NF-kappa-B controls genes that have a kappa-B site, its cognate recognition element in promoters. And the interferon response factors activate genes that have an IRE, an IRF binding sequence, in their promoters. And then there are some genes that require both of these elements. And there was no reason to question this particular model, but we were interested in whether P50 knockout macrophages, so macrophages that are deficient in one of the NF-kappa-B subunits, whether they show deficiencies in activation of NF-kappa-B target genes. And what we found, to our surprise, was that there was a very strong defect in the activation of IRF target genes. And that caught us by surprise because we assumed that P50 was only binding to kappa-B sites. And then when we got this phenotype, we decided to look into more detail and realized that actually P50 homodimers are able to bind IRE sites as well and compete with IRF for binding these particular sites. And so it turns out then that P50 homodimers function as a competitive inhibitor of IRF transcription factors.
So in order for IRF-responsive genes then to be activated, not only do the IRFs have to bind to the promoter to promote their transcription, but also the P50 homodimers that are acting as repressors have to be displaced from those promoters.
Yeah, that's correct, that P50 functions as a competitive repressors for IRFs, and so the level of P50 in the nucleus of cells will determine how sensitive or resistant these genes are to IRF activation. And what turns out to be the case is that actually some IRE-containing genes can be controlled by P50, and those are the ones that have guanine-rich IRE elements, G-rich IREs. But there's another subset of IRE elements that are not guanine-rich, and those P50 does not seem to regulate. And so those are rather insensitive to the levels of P50.
Those are the genes then that would get turned on by a small amount of IRF activity.
Yeah, they may be more sensitive, or there may be another way of regulating their sensitivity. That's possible. But aside from that, what became clear is that genes that are controlled by a combination of NF-kappa-B and IRF transcription factors that were presumed to require activation of both of these, IRF and NF-kappa-B, that when P50 is missing, this sort of threshold function that P50 repressor provides, when that is missing, even really small levels of IRF make these genes sensitive. And so they are induced much more readily and sometimes inappropriately. So the specificity that we talked about earlier, ligand specificity for gene activation, is lost in a P50 knockout mouse. And so the antiviral responses are induced even to receptor ligands that are actually non-viral. So bacterial components that usually do not activate antiviral responses in cells in a P50 knockout will lead to these antiviral responses to be activated inappropriately.
P50 is sort of acting as, in some ways, the brakes on the innate immune response.
Yeah, exactly. It's functioning as a brake on a specific subset of the innate immune response. We call it a gatekeeper for a subset of genes. And the idea of a gatekeeper is a little bit more than a brake. A gatekeeper means a particular stimulus is allowed to activate the gene and another stimulus is not allowed to activate the gene. And when you don't have the gatekeeper, then any stimulus will activate your gene. So you lose the specificity.
Do you think that this gatekeeping property is unique to P50, or do you think there are other transcription factors that are playing a similar role?
Yeah, there are actually a number of mechanisms that provide gatekeeping roles. The first mechanism is actually nucleosomes, chromatin itself. Nucleosomes ensure that transcription is at a low level unless activators are present. And actually, if you think about it, bacteria whose DNA is not wrapped up in nucleosomes, their transcription regulation functions primarily through repressor proteins, whereas in mammalian cells, transcription regulation primarily occurs through activators, and that's because nucleosomes essentially shut down constitutive transcription. So transcription is only induced on an as-need basis. So the nucleosomes can be thought of as gatekeepers in this way. But what's different, of course, about P50 and possibly other transcriptional repressors like it is that their levels can be manipulated by the cell. And so the relative strength of inhibition, brake function, or gatekeeping function can be altered. And in the case of P50, it's a function of the inflammatory history. So if a cell has been pre-exposed to inflammatory cytokines, it will have a higher level of P50 than cells that are relatively naive or are not in that type of environment. But precisely how that's going to relate to particular disease contexts, you know, we need to still look into and understand better. At this point, we've identified P50 as a gatekeeper of gene expression, and we know that P50 levels can be manipulated, that a cell can manipulate them, can change them, and therefore can probably affect large-scale gene expression changes.
So you mentioned that cells that have been previously exposed to cytokines or cells that have experienced inflammation have more P50 and therefore they should be less sensitive to inducing the response genes.
Mm-hmm.
What about different cell types? Is there just some natural variation in different cell types that some cells have more P50 and so they're less sensitive, or some cells have less P50 and so they're more sensitive?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and should definitely be looked at. And we do know that the P50 levels vary quite a lot between different tissues, different cell types. But also, as I mentioned, they are a function of the environment that the cell finds itself in, and particularly with regards to a disease-associated inflammation versus a healthy tissue. And so disease-associated inflammation will lead to higher levels of P50, and we would predict a blunted innate immune response. But that remains to be looked at.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
Thank you.
That was Alexander Hoffman, senior author of a research article published this week in Science Signaling. That paper is by Chang and colleagues, and it's titled, "The Specificity of Innate Immune Responses is Enforced by Repression of Interferon Response Elements by NF-kappa-B P50. And that concludes this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, advancing science, serving society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.